Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio, Rum Radio Internet Radio, and rumradio.org, the website, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. I would like to acknowledge WNAH, Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Arkansas as a public service presentation. We'd also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and that affords us some print space from time to time. I'd gratefully like to introduce my co-host, Harold B., a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe the families are the basic unit of our society, and as the family goes, so does the country. Harold tonight is not available. Usually Monday night is a rerun of the Sunday show, and it was an interesting Sunday. This is Labor Day weekend, and this is the end of summer as far as some people concerned. It's really just the last holiday of the summer, the beginning of September. Folks are getting back to school, or they've already gone back to school. So summer vacation is over. Usually by now the summer heat is starting to break, and it's starting to break here even in Houston, but not a lot, but it's starting to break. And last night I was on a little retreat, a church retreat with some friends it's a singles deal, and I thought I'd take some time off and go to Galveston. And I was going to run the show, run the board from the hotel, Holiday Inn. And I made sure that they had Wi-Fi available, and Harold was available last night, and we were going to do a show. And it turned out that the Wi-Fi didn't work at the Holiday Inn. And it was a last-minute kind of deal, you know, getting there just in time to set up and get the board going, and that didn't work. And then the information we needed was on the website or on my WordPress. On my Word document, I could have took it as a Word document, and the site had crashed. We still don't know exactly what happened, but last night the site had crashed. We're not able to get the information. I was not able to get online. Harold couldn't find his big book. I mean, the thing just went down. He finally found his big book. And what I've discovered is that we plan, God laughs. And the only thing perfect in this world is a storm. So we had the perfect storm going last night, and my friend's going, you know, why don't you just let Harold handle it, and you go out and entertain yourself with your friends at church and relax, listen to the ocean, have a good time, and watch the waning of the blue moon. August, we had a blue moon. That's two full moons in a month. We had August had a blue moon. I saw you standing alone. That used to be one of my favorite songs. It goes back some time. So Harold tonight is not available, and I'm going to do the show that normally we would have done last night, and the perfect storm is now over. The website came back, it crashed, and for some unknown reason, it came back. I have some ideas, but nothing I can confirm. I was surprised when I got home this afternoon. We were up and running. So just wanted to acknowledge Harold. He does a good work. He's also my sponsor, so it's always good to acknowledge him in that sense, too. Tonight, we're going to be doing a show, excerpts from The Captain's Table. It's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're from steerage to captain's table. We're like survivors from a shipwreck. Before I get started, I also like to do this. to start off with the third step prayer. It's one of the first assignments I give to my new sponsees. And I do that because it gets them used to picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. Usually I suggest to my sponsee that they get a newcomer's packet, or if the club doesn't do it or the group doesn't do a newcomer's packet, which I think is a really good idea, an informational packet, some pamphlets from the GSO, understandings of sponsorship, what an alcoholic is, what an alcohol isn't, decisions like that could be made with the information. Also a list of other places where meetings and put their name and phone number, and they make themselves available to the telephone to the newcomer. I usually suggest they get that. It also becomes their lifeline. Do that early on, you know, so you get them started correctly. I believe a good start, a good beginning has a good ending most of the time. And so they get the name, and one of the requirements I ask them to do, one of the suggestion is a subtle command. I've often heard it said, it was like your sponsor tells you, we just jumped out of a plane, and now it's time. The suggestion is you pull the ripcord so you could come down on an easy landing. You don't have to if you don't want to, but the consequences of inactivity will be self-evident when you hit the ground. So the suggestion would be to call one of the men on your 12-step list, on your newcomers list, or have a go early to a meeting and have your sponsee pass around a piece of paper, have the chairperson announce that they need names. He's looking for names that available to the telephone calls. It's common practice. And for the first 30 days, to call a different fella on the list for the next 30 days and ask him permission to recite the third step prayer. It's one of the first assignments I give to a sponsee. Some people might agree. It wasn't my idea. A fellow by the name of Dudley came up with it. I thought it was a great idea. I've used it, and it gives a really good start. I've been fortunate enough that most of the fellows I work with attain and maintain long-term sobriety, and I'm nobody special, but using certain particular tools in a certain particular way fixes the car. It just does. My dad was a mechanic. For every problem, there's always a tool. You never have enough tools. And this is a tool that I find to be very productive. And the third step prayer goes like this. He'd call up, and the reason, I give him the reason why. First of all, it gets him used to picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. How often it is that we can help someone, but our egos will not allow someone to help us. So you're going to ask for help. My sponsors ask me to call you up and recite the third step prayer. Is that all right? Yeah, sure. Most of the time, I've never had anybody. I had one jerk. He didn't like me, though, personally. And he took exception to the fact that a sponsee called him and I was his sponsor. But he didn't like me. So when he heard my name, he took exception even to the prayer. It was a whack job anyway. But sometimes those are the personalities that you come across in the rash and the well of them. The rash is because you're rubbing elbows and you get a rash, and the well, it's a welled population. It wells up. And the other reason is it connects them up with their potential home group. I always suggest to a sponsee that they connect up with a home group. This is like your new family. I will tell you this, we're less than kin and more than kind. We're quite cut from the same cloth, and you'll find that out more and more. We're a group of people that normally would not mix, except for our common survivors from a common peril. That's the kind. We're like and kind. The other reason is the third step prayer, I also call the surrender prayer. It's going to encapsulate what we're going to try to accomplish by getting rid of the ego, acknowledging God, that there's something other than us running the show. And fourthly, the fellow that you're calling might have been thinking about picking up his first drink of alcohol. And when you do, he probably will not. There's no guarantee, but that's my experience. Most people like to hear that. They're glad to hear this prayer. They're glad that somebody's out there working a program. If one helps, we all help. If one drowns, we all drown. There's no big shots in AA. If one gets shot, we all get shot. And this is the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. It's not in there, but I like to get an amen. And so it is, and so it shall be. That's a third step prayer. So now, let's get started. The first segment from the captain's table. The next one, this is the second installment of several understandings. It's called the Law of Opposition. Before I get started, I'd like to give the call-in number. It's 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. It would be a help. As much as I'm enamored with my own voice, it's nice to have someone else to as a counterpoint. If you'd like to add something, or you have a suggestion, opinion, or a comment, you're more than welcome to call in. I've heard tell that we do not work the steps. Besides, I don't own any alcoholic that likes to do the hard work of recovery. We do the steps so that we can do the work. The work is keeping these principles in all our affairs and extending the hand of AA to those that still suffer. That's the work. Great spirits have always encountered violent opposition from mediocre minds. Albert Einstein. The Law of Opposition, I like to start with this. This is in KJV, King James Version. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. A body in motion tends to stay in motion, as a body at rest tends to get drunk. Expect opposition. There's a law irrevocably decreed that for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. It's a temporal law. I also believe that all temporal laws were first spiritual laws, and they remain the same. The law is the same, except one spiritual, and then it manifested itself into the temporal or the physical world. Spiritual world, temporal world, or physical world. Spiritual or physical. The law of opposition comes into play. There is opposition in all things, for nothing grows without an opposing force. When you go to the gym and lift weights, gravity is the opposition as it strengthens bones and builds muscle. If you ever look at the yin and the yang, people have seen that. They're like teardrops with tails. And one's white and one's black. That's light and darkness. You can't have darkness without light. You can't have light without darkness. You have to have those two propositions. You can't have health without sickness. You can't have pleasure without pain. Getting the gist of this, folks? Everything has a opposing force to it. That's the glue that holds it all together. A butterfly struggling to free itself from its cocoon That struggle strengthens its wings, and that's what enables it to fly off majestically. When we begin the spiritual work of the 12-step process, we are often opposed spiritually as we try to free ourselves from the cocoon of addiction. Bottle of booze long since hid will seem to miraculously materialize. A drug long since forgotten will be found in an inside coat pocket. The opposite sex with your favorite addiction in tow will make themselves known. These things and more will occur when you're the most susceptible during periods of restlessness, irritability, and discontent. Physical, mental, and emotional exhaustion. When we're hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. And with that temptation, a way to escape has been made. So this is going to happen. A lot of people don't realize that this isn't a maybe deal. My experience is these things will happen. Something will happen. You're not really quite sure what it is at the time, and this is what I'm telling you. To be forewarned is to be forearmed. When you try to grow spiritually, you will be opposed spiritually. So what's the escape look like? Well, get on your knees and ask God to remove the craving. Got to take an action. Getting on your knees and praying is an action. Prayer is an action. You do something. The scriptures even say, you turn towards God first, and then he turns towards you, because he's God. He's not going to turn towards you and get the possibility that you might not accept that help. Who are you? You're nobody. So we rely on God. So we turn, we do something. We take an action, get on your knees, and ask God to remove the craving. It worked for me, and I know it worked for countless others, but you have to take that action, and you just stay on your knees until the craving goes away. It's not going to be there for a long time, anywhere from seven seconds to 7 minutes. Lincoln said, you're as happy as you make up your mind to be. Shakespeare said, nothing is good or ill as thinking makes it so. So we turn our thoughts, we turn our thoughts to God and away from our addiction, which is very cunning, baffling, and powerful. So we need something stronger than alcohol, and surely God fits the bill. We were not able to do that. I was not able to do that. If you can, then maybe you're not an alcoholic of my ilk, but I couldn't do it on my own. Call your sponsor. Oh, wow. What if I don't have a sponsor? You get a sponsor. Sponsors like an American Express card. You never leave home without one. You could be in the program. This could be your first day. You get a temporary sponsor. You could be 40 years sober. You have a sponsor. You don't have to have a sponsor who has 41 years. You can have a sponsor that has a lot less time. Usually, if you got 40 years, you want somebody probably with about 5 years, but that's still not necessary. It might even be exciting to have somebody who's worked through all 12 steps. He's excited. He's got that enthusiasm. He's developed a passion for the work and for the service. Wow, what a great idea. Having somebody fresh give you a fresh coat of paint. But you got 40 years, 45 years of sobriety. Are you still teachable, big guy? That's how you find out. So that new guy can give you a really nice coat of paint and get your passion going. Enthusiasm is a sales term. The definition of a sale is the transference of enthusiasm. Go get that enthusiasm and now pass it on. You call your sponsor, other program members. You got that list. Remember the list I was talking about? You have your list. That's your lifeline list. You're out of town. You're new in the program. You're very susceptible to temptation. You're away. You're out of town, especially out of town, away from the wife, away from the kids, away from people you know. Who would know? boy a drink right now. Bill went through that in Akron. He was ready. He's 5 months sober. He was ready to be the king for the night. 2 bottles of gin. And then he realized, gee, I better if I find another alcoholic, I can work with him. Yeah, that's the way to go. That moment of inspiration. God's whisper. Get to a meeting. Okay, well, let's see. I got my little book here. Oh, there's a meeting here. There's a meeting. Oh, it started 15 minutes ago, and it takes me 15 minutes to get there. I don't want to walk in late. You go. I'm only going to go for the last 10 minutes. You go. If you make it to the Lord's Prayer, you're right on time. That's what my first sponsor told me. I was running late. I was supposed to meet him. I was about 10 minutes late. Didn't show because I didn't want to disrupt the meeting. I wanted to honor the meeting. And, of course, I didn't want people looking at me because I didn't know anybody particularly, because it's all about me, my ego. Didn't want to, show I was on time and all that stuff. And my sponsor called me and said, where were you? I said, I was running late. And he says, don't forget, it's not about you. You're only late to your first meeting. Only your first one you're late to. If you make it to the closing prayer, whatever that looks like in your fellowship, you're right on time. Sometimes I needed to circle up and be a part of that prayer. Sometimes I walked in and heard the last share, and that was exactly what I needed to hear because I took the effort. People are going to say, oh, look, he came in late. So I came in late. All right. So most people don't even think about it. They don't care. Most people are so busy thinking about themselves, they're not looking at you. Get over it. So you get there in the circle and you have your prayer. Unless I forget, turn to your thoughts to someone you can help. Wow, that's a big deal for an alcoholic. For most people, natural man has been an enemy to God and has been so since the fall. And the winter doesn't look much better. They're talking about the fall of Adam, natural man. This is the natural man is an enemy to God. So spirituality is not a natural phenomenon to the physical person. It's not. Something that has to be learned, beaten. You have to be beaten into a state of reasonableness. I think they call it in the scripture, they call it the furnace of affliction. And you turn your mind to someone you can help. Doesn't have to be somebody in AA, could be a neighbor, could be somebody cutting someone's grass, it could be helping out somebody on the street, it could be cleaning ashtrays, it could be giving somebody a lift. Turn your mind to someone you can help. Turn your thoughts to someone you can help. And be grateful for the ability to act and not to be acted upon. For this too shall pass, for patience is bitter, but its fruits are sweet. That craving's only going to last a short amount of time if you don't dwell on it. Once you dwell on it, you're going down a sinkhole. I like to think in May 5th, sinkhole de Mayo. You're going down that hole. Turn your thoughts to someone you can help. Makes a huge difference. Turn your thoughts to God in prayer. Turn your thoughts into getting into action. Turn your thoughts. Remember, all this and more has been given to you for your growth by an all-knowing and all-loving God. The battle royal rages. Spirits have been a plague throughout all time and all ages. King Alcohol, Demon Rum, Little Sir John Barleycorn, provided the strongest at last. For a tinker can't dam neither kettle nor pot without a little barley corn. That's from a 13th century dirge, which is like a funeral song. John Barleycorn Must Die. That was made popular again by a rock and roll group called Traffic. I think it was in the early 70s. But this came from the 13th century. John Barleycorn Must Die. Alcohol addiction has been around for a very, very long time. Matter of fact, my understanding is the builders of the pyramid, part of their pay was fermented beer. The Egyptians had a leg up on building the pyramids. What is it? I don't remember the question. Beer is the answer. The 12-step process was a gift from a loving God, and the gift of service is how we stay happy, joyous, and free, and puts us on the road to happy destiny. I believe for when we're in the service of our fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? And when we're in that service, are we not divorced from self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity? And in that moment and in that service, is that not when we make our conscious contact with our Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic word in AA is action, and more action, for faith without works is dead. Faith without works is dead is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's an understanding directly from the big book. And I believe that that is quite true. All right, so that's the law of opposition. I hope that was a bit of a help. The next segment we're going to tackle, and this caused arguments about 3 years ago when I first started espousing this. I call this section Myths, Urban Legends, and the Parroting of the AA Conference-Approved Police. The one good thing about repeating your mistakes is that you know when to cringe. Alexander Solzhenitsyn. AA Conference-Approved Myths, a good start on an old subject. The voice will be a little different. This is Dick B. Dick B is an interesting fellow. He lives in Hawaii. I believe Dick is probably about 87, 6, like that. Princeton graduate, retired attorney, very learned man, AA historian, without exception. He probably knows more about AA history than any living human being. I'll go further than that. He probably knows more about AA history than anybody dead or alive. He probably knows more than the people who lived it. He knows more than that. He's written I don't know how many books. His deal now is the Christian AA. He's branched off, and I think because of Dick's age, I like to think of it this way. The reason why old men study the scriptures is because they're cramming for final exams. Dick looks at the beginnings of AA as a Christian fellowship, and he believes that's the way, the truth, and the light. I would not disagree with him. My point is that you can't give them meat right now. You have to give them milk, otherwise they shall perish. You have to take them where you find them, but you don't have to leave them there. And eventually they're going to come to other understandings of spiritual growth and life. But I think coming in the rooms, we have agnostics, atheists, heathens, infidels. We even have Christians. Heck, we even have lawyers coming in there. So that'll tell you how we're exclusively inclusive. All are welcome. Their only requirement is a desire to stop drinking. And the third tradition actually says, if you say you're a member, you're a member. We begin with the following much-needed article from Pete Stuff. It incorporates the long-ignored Box 459 article that the GSO, that's a General Service Organization, had told at least one seeker that it couldn't find the material. If you want to see an excellent and much longer discussion of the subject, go to Hinesworth Foundation site, where Professor Glenn Chestnut lays this entire conference-approved problem in terms of its real importance. This is Dick speaking. I receive questions about this all the time. And people at conferences, central offices, and meetings are confronted with this conference-approved nonsense with great frequency. Ooh. So evidently, if you've been in the program for any length of time, early on with me, that's what I heard. Is this conference-approved literature? When I was going to start Rum Radio, before Rum Radio, it was Harold 12-Step Sponsorship, How It Works by Hamilton B. I was at his workshop several years ago, and he wrote this book and was doing a workshop. He was in my home group in Austin. And I was really impressed with the book and with him and put it up on my shelf. It was about actually how do you sponsor somebody. Normally in AA and most of the other sister 12-step programs, because AA is the template, so if they usually do something a certain way, everybody else kind of just falls into line that way, as much as they say they don't, but they do. Because it's a template. And you sponsor the way your sponsor sponsored you, the way his sponsor sponsored him, the way his sponsor sponsored him, etc., etc., infinitum. And when I noticed that, what we were doing is using the verbal tradition in one of the most important aspects of the program. Now, some would disagree. We have Chapter 7, Working with Others, which is very definitive and can be solely used once it's understood and broken down into specific areas of study and understanding where written materials and questions could be developed. But everyone does that on their own, unless you've had a sponsor or somewhere along your lineage had done this and then repeated the process. Most of the time in my experience is done verbally. Well, it's very, it's a laissez-faire for most sponsees, as most sponsors. It's very laissez-faire. I mean, the hands-off, general, shoot-from-the-hip kind of deal. The question, my experience is, and the question is, if you wanted enough, if you wanted to get sober and the pain was great enough, and even with this littlest amount of encouragement and education, you will attain and maintain long-term sobriety. You might not be in recovery, but you'll be able to maintain sobriety. The problem is now it's your turn to sponsor, and you really don't have a clue what a sponsor's supposed to do. So you shoot from the hip, and you do what your sponsor did as much as you remember, and so the cycle just continues spin dry. So I said, hey, this might be a great idea. I'll do a workshop using the book as a template, the big book and the 12 and 12 and Hamilton Beasley's book. And I got that started, and the first question I got was, is that conference-approved literature? I said, well, I don't know. So I said, I'll find out. So I called up the GSO in New York and wanted to find out, how do you get something conference approved? And that's when I got the rest of the hint of it. There was no such critter as conference approved literature. And it was like a big bubble burst. I've heard it so long, this conference approved literature stuff. You know, if you hear something long enough and often enough, it has a sense of being a truth, an ingrained truth, which has more power than the real truth, the actual truth. Don't confuse me with the facts. And these are the facts. And any AA can read anything, anytime, anywhere, for any purpose, inside or outside of AA. And that includes comic books and computer manuals. There is no tradition that says otherwise. There is no tradition that can or should or will censor or censure, I've been censured, what is presented at a meeting. whether it's in discussion or by reading or by literature on a table. And if someone thinks he's found the mystical tradition, tell him the fact and then tell him the traditions are not laws, are not binding on anyone, and were never intended to prohibit free speech or freedom of religion by AA or others. That includes what we read, what we hear, what we say, what we study, and what we pass along to others. Those who suggest otherwise just don't know AA, nor do they seem to know that early Alcoholics Anonymous was a Christian fellowship, studied the King James Version of the Bible, read all kinds of literature, Protestant, Roman Catholic, New Thought, medical, and otherwise. It put out reams and reams of pamphlets and guides. As the years went by, the pamphlets included those from many central offices and intergroups, including the long-running Cleveland Central Bulletin, the four Akron AA, Akron, Ohio, AA pamphlets, and the Four Absolutes booklet available even today. You will find that many of these materials, including a host of recovery materials from Hazleton and elsewhere, are sold by AA offices. Oh my goodness. You sure this isn't heresy? Oh my goodness. There were materials published by the following writers, both mentioned and not mentioned. Sister Ignatia, Marty Mann, Clarence Snyder. Clarence said he was the one who really started AA. Clarence and Grace. Father Ralph Few, Father John Doe. He didn't use his name. He just went by Father John Doe. It was the anonymity deal. Widely distributed in the Midwest today, Richmond Walker and his offshoot books like the 24-hour book, Ed Webster, Detroit pamphlet, and on and on and on, Anonymous. Not to forget over 500 Oxford Group and Sam Shoemaker books and pamphlets that were read and circulated by Dr. Bob himself. Nor should we forget that the most ignored and suppressed writing of all, Ann Smith's journal, contained the heart of early AA and was discussed almost every morning at the Smith home during quiet times. They had a little meditation deal. Were there others? Oh, yeah. On tables at T. Henry's in meetings at the Smith home, at Oxford Group meetings in New York, and then a host of books of all varieties circulated by Dr. Bob, The Upper Room, My Utmost for His Highest Emmett Fox. James Allen, that was As the Man Think It, that's a great book. Glenn Clark, E. Stanley Jones, The Runner's Bible, The Greatest Thing in the World, Varieties of Religious Experiences, New Thought Writers, and on, we call them on and on, Anonymous. Including, of course, the Bible, which they called the Good Book. See Dick B., the Good Book, and the Big Book, second edition. Early AAs weren't afraid of literature. They devoured it, and they achieved cures. See Dick B., Dr. Bob, and his library, third edition. Ann Smith's journal, third edition. The books Early AAs Read for Spiritual Growth, seventh edition. The Oxford Group at Alcoholics Anonymous, second edition. New Light on Alcoholism, second edition. The Amazing Grace, I read that, that's good. Henrietta Seiberling, second edition. New Light on Alcoholism, second edition. The Amazing Grace, Ohio Ladies with a Cause, the Ohio Ladies with a Cause, the Akron Genesis of Alcoholics Anonymous, and Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. My recent title, Making Known, Take Off the Shackles and Use Your Mind. Better still, see what someone else has had to say about something, about nuclear physics, aviation, automatic weapons, popular mechanics, horticulture, counting, culinary arts, computers, the internet, American history, religious history, and comparative religions. Particularly, see what the Creator had to say, though what he revealed in his word. Our basic ideas came from there. My recent title, Making Known the Biblical History and Roots of Alcoholics Anonymous, specifically identifies hundreds and hundreds of writings that have contributed to the origins, history, founding principles, and practices of AA in just the few years it has been in existence. The Griffith Library at the Wilson House is filled with these books. So is the annex next to Dr. Bob's home. So is the library at Stepping Stone. So it's the traveling archives. Archivist Ray G takes all over the United States to conferences for public viewing. Conference-approved literature? Not that I know of. None of this stuff is conference-approved, because there's really no such critter. And then we have God Bless Dick B. And now, from the great piece found at Pete's Stuff, what conference-approved literature means. Any literature that pertains to the principles of AA or is approved by a group conscience is perfectly acceptable to be read by any AA member or in any AA meeting. So it goes back to group conscience. The group can determine what. Some groups I go to, they just started a primary purpose. I got them the little manual from Austin. Austin got it from Dallas. And it's a primary purpose thing. They go through the big book with this manual. And then there's a question. And the next line in the big book is the answer. And then there's a question. And the next line in the big book is the answer. And it comes in a study format with a study leader. And they just take the whole big book that way. Question and answer from the big book. So I'm kind of excited they've gotten that started. I was invited to their first meeting. Other than, you know, I encouraged it and gave them the book. Other than that, I had nothing to do with it. But it's nice that it's got a nice feeling to it. You hear in meetings we have AA-approved literature available for sale at cost. You hear it in group conscious meetings. We should only allow readings from AA approved literature. You hear non-group members cross-talking in a meeting when someone reads from Richmond Walker's 24 Hours a Day, Emmett Fox's Sermon on the Mount, or one of the Ralph Fuse Golden Books. You can't read that in an AA meeting. It's not AA approved literature. Factually, unlike Al-Anon, there's no such thing as AA-approved literature. Al-Anon does. I'm an Al-Anon. Al-Anon does have conference-approved literature. I think they have it because they think we had it. The early AAs read from the Bible, The Upper Room, Oswald Chambers, Cecil Rose, Leslie Weatherhead, Sam Shoemaker, Emmett Fox, Richmond Walker, Ralph Few, and many others. A simple visit to the DickBeeg.com will bear this out, as Dick B. aptly points out, whatever some may think, AA has no index of forbidden books. How about Lady Chatterley's Lover? Well, that's another story. In the 1950s, AA World Services took over works, publishing rights to publish the big book, and began publishing other books as well. In the course of the next 40 years, AAW, that's AA World Services, began to publish more books, but eventually lost the copyright on the first two editions of the big book. Oh, man. I wonder how that happened. It was either time or somebody forgot to file the documents. I'm hoping it's time. But, you know, that's what I love about AA. My church, when they first started their 12 steps, had no idea that AA would have objected to them taking that information. So they, you know, they churchified it. And, you know, like, it looked ridiculous. I had such a resentment. You know, I'm going like, what did you guys do? This isn't, you know, this isn't AA. You know, no, we're doing it the right way here. You guys don't do it right, you know. And I said, well, if the 12 steps are not a gift from God, why you adopted them? And if they are a gift from God, why do you feel so compelled to change them? Never get an answer on that one. Until 19, but they're evolving. I'll give them that. I think they got 3 or 4 years under their belt now, and little by little, they're evolving into more of a cleaner AA understanding. But time takes time. Until 1993, books which were owned and printed by AA World Services were identified by the use of a circle and a triangle symbol. If you're in the program, it's a very common understanding. Anybody sees that symbol, we know. Or if you're on a cruise and somebody says, friends of Bill W., you know, other people say, who's that? You're not one of us. Beginning the three legacies. That's the beginning of the three legacies, the three-legged triangle. On May 21, 1993, an AA World Service ad hoc committee released an unsigned document titled Follow-Up Statement Regarding the Use of the Circle Triangle Symbol in It, AAWS. That's AA World Services stated that Alcoholics Anonymous will phase out the official use of the circle and triangle symbol in and on its literature, letterheads, and other material that documents was issued without a conference action or a group conscience. Let me repeat that. That document was issued without a conference action or a group conscience. Darn. The term conference approved literature now replaces the circle triangle logo to merely identify AAGV, I guess, General Volume 57, Volume 50-7, 1993. The books solely owned and published by AA World Services are not as a predetermined list. No list. Gee. The most definitive illustration of this is that public domain first edition of the Big Book is not conference-approved literature. Oh, no. Holy cow. I'm going to hell in a handbasket with this thing. The Big Book is not conference-approved. Conference-approved does no way constitute a list of any written documents of which an AA body approves or disapproves. Please see the HOC Committee's final report of the 1993 General Services Conference. My goodness. I hope nobody threatens me with sacrilege here. A formal statement concerning the conference, the GSO, that's a General Service Organization, and what AA members read, was issued by the General Service Office of AA in 1978. So here it is, folks. Here's the official GSO stamp. Stamp of understanding. What conference approved means, GSO box 459, 4-5-9, 1978, volume 23, number 4. AA's, General Service Office said it does not mean the conference disapproves of any other publications. Many local AA central offices publish their own meetings list. AA as a whole does not oppose these any more than AA disapproves of the Bible. Oh, wow. Or any other publication from any source that AAs find useful. What any AA member reads is no business of the GSO or of the conference. Naturally. So there you go. I hope that was a definitive understanding. Dick B. has it, and there's more. I'll give you some references to look up, and of course the GSO. But I personally would have not known any of this unless I was challenged. And then I got into an argument with the DCM. She's still mad at me. It's been a couple years. She said, oh, I know who you are. Your reputation precedes you. You're the guy saying that there's no such thing as conference-approved literature. Uh-oh. She's never really gotten over it, but, you know, like, I still say hello to her. She still gets mad. She's read this article, and she's read other articles now. But I think it was I'm the guy that yelled at, hey, the emperor has no clothes on. And, you know, that's usually not the favorite guy. Even when people see that the emperor had no clothes, they look at the first guy who said it like, ah, he's the guy that said there was no Santa Claus. Okay, the next section we're going to do, I think we might finish it up. This is a short section. What you are comes to you. That's, I believe it was Walt Whitman came up with that. I thought I did, and then I saw that Walt Whitman had it first, so I'm going to give it to Walt. I have come to the understanding that most spiritual principles have a polarity. There we go again. Service is a spiritual concept, and that it is polarity, so it's got this other end of it. What's the other end of it? What is that? Is graciousness. That's an interesting word. Graciousness, to be gracious, accepting of grace. For me, it's much easier to give assistance than to be humble enough to receive assistance. The acceptance of service edifies both the giver and the receiver. I was at a religious conference one time, and I got up. It was a singles deal, and I brought the garbage can on wheels over, and I was cleaning off the tables. I had two purposes at the time. I was single, and I wanted to check out the ladies that were around the tables, and I was staying busy at the same time. And I went to get one of these somebody in a presidency position, a person of acclaim, and I went to take his used silverware and paper plate off the table, and he wouldn't allow me to do that. And he said, I don't like anybody to do stuff for me. Took me back a little bit. I thought that there was a lack of humility there, that he couldn't accept service. But I think that's more common than I realized at the time. When we're in the service of our fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? You've heard that one before, as we understand God. I believe service is one of the keys. Dr. Bob said, if you were going to state two words that would distill, you always want to use the word distill when it comes to alcohol. If you wanted to distill the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the two drops that would come out would be love and service. We love our fellows, and we show that love by service, giving up of ourselves. When we're in the past, when we are in the service of our fellow beings, are we not divorced from self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity? And in that service and in that moment, is that not when we make our conscious contact with our Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic words in AA is action and more action for faith without words is dead. I know I said it before, but you know what? I'm probably going to say it again. I think that's a critical understanding how this thing works. And until you get it, you don't. I used to live 2 feet from my body. It's an interesting thought. When we live in the past, we live in regret. Past is always about regret. Because, well, I had a really good past. Think about it. It could have been something better. The past is always about regret. Our language gives us away with terms like it could have been a lot worse. We have to remove the thought that by reliving the past, that somehow, some way, we were going to change it. Living in the previous insults, losses, failures. When I realized I could make a mistake, I knew I was onto something. I was working with a sponsee, and I read that part of the big book. I'd read it before, I'm sure, but it just happened to ring home to me because I knew I was doing the same thing. I have a tendency to go back in the past and relive some areas. And if I would have been just a little different, if I would have just made a little different course change, it would have all been, and you dwell on that. Like somehow, some way, by making that course change in the present, it was going to alter the past. Guess what? It's not. It is what it is. You learn from it and you move on. Do we not come from where we stand? What's the worst case scenario? What's the downside risk? It could have been worse. And of course, my all-time favorite, Let me tell you all the things that have gone wrong with my day. When we live in the now is the most powerful place. The Japanese call it satori. They have a word for it. And we call it the present because that's just what it is, living in the moment. Of course, now the future is always fraught with fear. It's that we haven't lived, it's an undiscovered country. The fear is always in the future. We didn't live, we haven't been there, and we always think what's the worst case scenario. That's the future. What could happen? And then we build up these things in our mind. What Mark Twain, something to the fact that I've had some really hard things happen to me, or I've had some really bad experiences, some of which actually happened. Most things, most fears that we have about the future or fear in itself usually never manifest itself. But we live them anyway in the future. So we're not in the past. You know, if we're in the past, we're in regret. We're in the future, we're in fear. And we're missing out on the present. And that's why they call it a present. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. The words maintenance and daily come into play. What maintains itself? Nothing maintains itself. You're either growing spiritually on a daily basis or you're declining spiritually. If you're declining spiritually, your recovery and then even your sobriety becomes tentative. If you have reached a plateau and do not continue to grow, you may even be sober, yet are you living life like a loose garment? Were we thinking of what we could do for others? Of what we could pack into the stream of life? Are we resting on our laurels? I call it restless laurelitis. Are the promises manifesting themselves in our lives? I think not. When you think on good thoughts, good things come to you. When you think bad thoughts, bad things come to you. Think good thoughts. I just put that in. That was what I gave to my granddaughter, Claire. She was telling me a week ago that she was having trepidations about going back to school. Well, the kid, I hate to tell you this, but the kid had gotten left back at kindergarten. How the heck do you get left back at kindergarten? She had a lot of emotional issues. She's the daughter of my youngest daughter who died from this disease. And the child was about 2.5 or 3 years old, thereabouts, not quite three, when her mother died. How do you tell a two-year-old that her mother's dead? How do you pass away? You're never going to see her again. How do you do that? Nobody knows what to do. Go to the doctor like that. So my other daughter, Jenny, was with her in the sandbox, and she told Jenny that, and Jenny didn't see anything, that Jesus came to her and told her that her mommy was with him and that she was fine and everything was okay. That was it. That's how she found out her mother had died. She's a sweet, sweet little girl. I needed to make amends to my daughter, Christina, and I never did. Never got around to that amends. I kept planning on it, but the moment never seemed right, and she passed on. So as a living amends, what I do is I'm the very best grandfather I can be. And it's a reward for both me and to the child. It's a challenge sometimes. Her dad is, what could I say that would be appropriate? He likes to be in control. And my granddaughter gets debriefed every time we come home. And she'll say things, Papa, how do you know all these things? You know, my standard answer, I have a library card. In conclusion, thoughts are like birds. Some take wing and soar. Some are content with last season's effortless nest. And some from the perch crap on anything shiny, new thoughts. So there we go. That's the hour coming up. Thank you so much for your time and your effort. I hope this meant something to you. If you listen to this, some really good information. Remember, like always, we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.